tell this is, you know, Andy's project. So I'll provide you with whatever we get. So basically, this is a joint project between Emilio and Andy Maidan. So basically,
Andy is going to answer all the hard questions tomorrow.
No. No, my talk is uncorrelated with this. There is no connection.
So actually, this morning, Joe Trebia gives a really good motivation for the data simulation problem, and including this one. So, you know, I should just say one word. We have a problem with the curse of dimensionality, remember, and its race of it. Now, another motivation, so I'll probably discuss from the second point, because everybody is sort of clear why we have a dimensionality problem. Now, there are recent developments in the prediction problem by using information from observation, you know, by another reduced filtering strategy, which is mentioned as well and explained very well by Chris Snyder, which is ensemble comma filter. So for those who are new to the field, you might want to, you know, go through a couple of papers of Evans and Hammer and so on for ensemble comma filter. Now, as Chris and Joe mentioned earlier, that we have a problem like how large is the ensemble size that is needed, you know, to represent the uncertainties for stable and accurate filter, right? So in this presentation, okay, we will sort of take a different approach in the sense that we want to allow the predictor of the model to sort of violate, you know, to sort of commit a huge crime by taking a large time step in the propagating each state actually. So imagine that for a current prediction, probably the time step use is maybe 15 minutes or 45 minutes for NSAP T62. And then let's say your observation are taking every 6 hours. What we want to do is actually to let those GCM to be taking like a 6 hour time step. By doing that, then we save a lot of time in the propagation, and then we can probably allow a huge ensemble size. Now, for a stable filtering, people who are familiar with the field might probably refer to like observability criteria for stability of filter, which is shown by Cohn and Dean in 1988. But in a recent paper by Grote and Maida in PNAS 2006, they showed that, sure, when you allow a huge time step, you're still within the criteria of observability, but then your covariance matrix, of the filter is in the order of condition number 10 to the 15. 10 to the 13, right?
10 to the 13 from the safety.
13 to 15.
Doesn't mean you have a good filter, right? So here we are trying to come up with another idea of how we want to use this, you know, how we want to come up with an offline criteria. Now for the offline of the talk here, I would start with revisiting the MIDA and GROW PNAS 2007 offline testing criteria. So basically we will revisit this is as a, the stability condition here is basically an analog of von Neumann criteria for standard numerical PDE. And then I'll invoke some information criteria or information theory that has been advocated by Andy on Monday. And then later I'll show we'll test the theory to a complex scalar one-side Hollenbeck process and then some scalar wave equation with weak damping. And last I'll just show you some result simulation with Poorman stochastic model for L96 model. Now, I would like to go to the general setting of the filtering. Now, given a turbulent field, right, one simplest canonical test problem or canonical test model for a turbulent flow, like given any PDE, you could probably do is like just by using the standard linear stochastically for speed E. So given you look at these two terms here, it's probably come from by linearizing the PDE at frozen coefficients. And then to reaccount the nonlinearly determinant you truncate out, basically you add a damping and stochastic norms here. It's not the best idea, but it's, you know, we use this as a precondition in this form. Okay? Now for
since I'm the inventor of this idea, let me comment.
Right.
The notion is we're interested in, like all the Neumann-type test criteria, in a canonical, analyzable set of model problems for very turbulent rough spectra. So you want something you can get an answer for. So you need damping, and you need stochastic forcing in the simplest ways to represent any turnover times in turbulent cascades. And so you freeze the coefficients, like von Neumann would be for a constant coefficient model, and then you mimic the turbulence by damping your
stochastic noise. For discrete-time filtering, then we set up the problem so that the observations come at every time step tm, and you discretize it. It's available at every grid point j. So basic idea is, you know, here is the observations. I denote it as v, and g is a function that map your model state into your observation state with Gaussian noise here. Okay, with standard Gaussian noise, unbiased with Poirier's RO. Now, in this talk, I would focus on uniformly distributed observations that are available at on every grid point, every discretized model grid point. So in the sense, the G is basically just diagonal matrix for this case. Okay. Now, so here is a for this standard stack setup, let me talk a little bit. So for the tutorial, for those who is not, for those who doesn't know about like CF, the stability criteria for PDE, what basically people does normally is like, given, for example, PDE, when they do von Neumann criteria is that you go to the Fourier mode, you go to Fourier space, and then you look at the amplitude of each dynamical operator, and you want it to be less than one. But those dynamical operator depends on your numerical type discretization, might be depends on the size of your model, your grid point in between here, your H here, and the time step, and then you'll say that you have a stable, a numerical PDE if it satisfies the CFL condition, for example. Now, the whole problem of this that we are doing on the filtering, that we are not just doing the stability to the sole PDE, but we are doing it to this pair filtering problem, so the PDE and the observation. So we are going to apply von Neumann criteria, not just to the PDE, but to the filtering problem.
We're going to invent new von Neumann criteria.
Pretty much an analog of von Neumann criteria. Kind of like Neumann?
It's getting late, I'm sorry.
It's okay. So now we go to the Fourier domain. In the Fourier space, then the predictor, the filtering problem on each wave number is could be represented by following stochastic differential equation, which is basically a linear stochastic differential equation with noise. For those who are familiar, this is basically a line-defined equation that describes constant Uhlenbeck process. And then you have the observations. Okay. Now, let me give a couple of remarks here is that each mode here, or each SDE, has a equilibrium energy spectrum, which is sigma squared over 2 gamma. Gamma is the damping term here, and omega is just the frequency. And the correlation time, that is the time when the dynamical system start to forget the initial condition, is represented by gamma k to the minus 1. Okay? In this filtering problem, we are, as I talked about earlier, we're interested in the case where the observation time is basically equal to the discrete time step where T ops is huge in this case. Okay? Now I want to of terminology here, because I don't see this on paper, any paper yet. So I want it to be at least clear what I mean later on by true signal and true filter and so on. So the exact solution of that stochastic differential equation is basically given by the following equation. So it's basically exponentially decay plus some noise, some Gaussian noise here, with the noise variance given as such R. Okay? Now, this true signal is basically hidden from your filter based on in atmospheric flow, it's like you don't know what is the true state of your system, right? So I call that the true signal. Now, in order to distinguish between whatever in the filter with the true signal, so I introduce a notation where here I call prior state, okay, which is a state where a state at time n plus 1 where you have not incorporated observations at time n plus 1. So it's just up to n. Okay, so some people in meteorology call this a background or prior forecast. And then I define also a posterior state, which is analysis, okay, or corrected state, if you like. I define these two terms just to distinguish it between the true signal here. Okay? So whatever that you see with mm, m plus 1, m, those all are related to the filter. Then we define a true filter is basically solving this pair of problem where the dynamical operator is an exact solution of the SDE. Okay? For those who are not familiar with the filtering, as I will mention one again, that the true signal here is hidden from the true filter. Okay? What you fit to the filtering later on is just the observations which relate to the true signal by this operator G. Now, we want to define what we call approximate filters. So here is a typical way how people does this in GCM or pseudo-spectral model, is that we define an approximate filter here by a filter solution with both the temporal and spatially discretized numerical approximation. So instead of using this exact solution of the SDE, so you might want to use some standard scheme, which in spatial discretization might be an upwind scheme or a center difference scheme that might affect a different lambda. Remember that lambda is basically just the dynamical operator here, okay? And then temporarily, we check it using forward Euler and then two other implicit scheme, backward Euler and trapezoidal. Okay, the reason why I check that is just because those are the standard numerical discretization that one might be interested in because it's cheap, okay, especially when delta t is huge. So in general, I would just write the approximate filter, replicate to the previous one here, but instead of with exponentially decay operator, we use FH by noting that's an approximate solution. Okay? So we have true filter, we have approximate filter, we have true signal. The true signal is hidden from any kind of filter that you like.
In the sentence that you say filter, you actually mean a solution,
right? What I mean by filter is a predictor corrector method. That includes
forward step of your
discretized
stochastic PDE
and
the filtering process that gives the
yes,
includes the data that went through the G filter.
Sure.
Right.
So
okay.
Here I need to fit this model eventually with this analysis, right, or posterior state, right? To get this posterior state, I need to do the correction, because all we assume here is linear function and then Gaussian, then later on we're going to do it with Kalman filter, which is the least unbiased method. So I'm going to discuss today. Do you have any comment?
I was just going to say one thing for the people who know classical numerical analysis. We're doing for filtering right now with an assessment of model error, the analog of the Dahlquist stability theory without observations for ODEs.
Yes.
Where you have the scalar test problem and you study that.
So here in particular, we are interested when your dynamical operator here is unstable, especially for forward boiler, that could happen, and the stable for the other implicit scheme.
And then what does a subscript H denote?
Just approximate.
Spatial mesh.
Yeah.
That there's a spatial mesh of size H.
Right. So basically all of this supposed to be there is a subscript K too, K for wave numbers. I just take away all of those. So on the each Fourier mode you have this independent scalar filter problem. So I just go into that Kalman filter. So here's a just very quick tutorial. I think I need to be a little bit more explicit about this because, well, Chris gave a really nice cartoon about how to do Kalman filter, what does that mean. And now I'll just, you know, go into the equations. So given a following problem with all the Gaussian density that we have, then the basic Kalman filters is basically just a solution of the, it's just a least, you're basically trying to weight your, try to get the best state that might represent some weight from your prior forecast and your observations. So the equation for, to do that is you weighted it with the Kalman gain here, that is weighted by the following equations.
Yeah, typo, you should have squared there. Sigma naught squared, the variance, clearly the observation variance.
Yeah, this is RO.
Squared though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be squared.
Yeah, the typo, I'm just...
Yeah, it should be. It should be squared, right. And then here's your filter covariance, and, you know, your filter covariance is propagated forward via this F squared here, via this model, okay? So if you look at this first three equations, right, it's basically involve nothing from the observations. Remember, the observations is V, right? So up to here, you don't have any observations involved within this equation. So we call those offline because you could just do it, right? You don't need any observations. Now the online is when you update the real state where you weight your new your posterior state with respect to your dynamics or your observations, where you weighted them. Okay. Now, I think perhaps I should go back to what is the classical stability theory for filtering. Okay. This theory has been sitting there since, you know, I don't know when is the original date, but
late
60s. But I took it from Anderson and Moore, 79, which is pretty old. It's stating that if you're given like... So if you're given the following filtering problem, okay, for ODE type problem, then the classical stability is saying that you have a filter stability, and it represented that by you have a limiting Kalman gain, and then you can quantify by the following quantity to be less than one if you satisfy one of these two cases. Okay, the first one is if the amplitude of the dynamical operator is less than one, then you're good, you're stable. The second one is that suppose we don't have this condition, okay, F bar could be anything, let's say. As long as you satisfy observability and controllability, then you're good too. Okay? Now, I should say what is observability means in our scalar filter problem here. Here, it just means that the dynamical operator cannot be zero. But for our case, because this is a scalar filtering problem, it doesn't matter. Watch, if this is zero, then what is your dynamics? It's basically just noise. And what the filter is going to do, it's going to just trust the observations, right? On the other hand, the controllability, which will pay attention, it means in this case is that the system noise here is non-zero, okay? So let me review a little bit again that we have this little theory for ODE, theory for stability of filtering for ODE, and then We would like to borrow this theory and apply it to spatially extended system that represented by PDE. So the new, well, von Neumann analog criteria is that you use this to this PDE on each Fourier mode. So mathematically, you could think about that. Yes?
So right now, the only criterion you have on being good is that there be noise in the system. That's what you said.
Yes.
And that's it at this point. There's no requisite rate of information.
There's going to be more stuff coming. Wait. He's going very slowly and systematically.
Okay.
So be patient.
He said good at this point.
Yeah.
Be patient.
Okay.
If he goes too slow, it might not come. So
I know. But at least I want to get the PNAS.
This is the minimum.
Okay.
This is the minimum.
Right. So I should probably remind a little bit. I should talk about what does it mean K here. What does it mean stability? This limiting common gain, you can't solve it for this scalar problem by solving this. Try to find a fixed point of this equation. And then I should give you some intuition. K, the common gain, is a number between 0 and 1, so that when K is 0, that means you trust the dynamics. Okay? And then when K is 1, here, you trust observation. Okay? Just remember one or the other. When K is 1, you trust observations. Because later on, we're going to use that as an a priori check how is our filter is going to do. Now, there's another thing that we could check. We could check the following quantity. Okay, here's a mean model error. By model error here, in numerical, standard numerical text, is like a local error, right? Which is mean model errors due to the finite difference scheme. So basically, mean model error is defined as expectation of your approximate filter solution minus the truth that is hidden from the model. So Maida and Groh in their PNAS paper showed that we could basically compute this mean model error iteratively, okay? And then you can see this factor, this stability factor F1 minus KG come again here. So it's basically reflected. If you have a stable filtering, then this will die down, okay? And then, but there's important thing that we think is pretty cool here is that if you have like unstable dynamical operator here, okay, you start with unstable dynamical operator, you can actually bound your mean model error from above by the following inequality. And what you can see here is that, okay, suppose if this difference is huge, F is huge number, and then you got an initial huge expectation of state. But then, since F is huge here, it will be, digressed by this. So this will overturn that, so that these things will be bounded, right? Okay, so this actually explains why, even if your numerical approximate is unstable, then you can still have possible, you are possible to have a stable filter.
Hey,
yeah?
So the right-hand side, not the bound is just bounded, small.
It's just an upper bound.
Just an upper bound.
Right. But what we found is in our numerical simulation, pretty much, it's going to zero.
So we test it offline.
We tested it.
Then we'll run the filters under.
And this is offline too.
Extremely curvy spectra and stuff, and see how they do.
Right. So this is
including spatial versions.
So this is one of the offline measure that we check too, because you see, you don't have any observations here. Just iteratively running. So the summary of this offline testing is that we want to check several quantities. First is the amplitude of the dynamical operator. Okay, if less than 1, then you're in a good hand. But then you also want to check your limiting common gain, and then your stability amplification factor, which is represented by F1 minus KG, and then your mean model error, and then the controllability of the system. Okay? So those theory.
So I'm going to ask about this mean model error. That includes, if I understand correctly, it's not really the error in the dynamical propagation, but but it also includes...
It's only the error in the numerical approximation that you were doing.
So your numerical approximation is...
Can I ask, in that equation that defines ym plus 1, isn't the one below that?
Right.
There's a k, is that not a gain?
Yeah.
There's a k. Oh, yeah, this is a common gain, right.
Yeah, so
yeah.
So what you get is your filter is unbiased for a bad for the finite difference model, but it's got a bias for the truth model. So you can ask, what are the errors made in doing it? And that's how you get ym plus 1 if you organize the identity well.
Because
so that this is the difference in the model error. And then you get, it turns out, just if you do the math, you get this as the other factor. That's just because the Kalman gain's weighting the observation. And then what we do offline is assess this by putting in the asymptotic infinite Kalman filter, where for this complex scalar field, Emilio has done a beautiful job of writing a closed formula for that too. So we actually have everything offline.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm still confused. When I say model error, I mean if I started with the true state and apply my propagator, the dynamical operator to move forward, I wouldn't get exactly the correct results when I...
That's right. That's what we
yes.
got there. That's what
so that's
doing.
All that you've got.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what we got there, and it turns
yeah.
out to have this elegant form if you work on it.
Okay. So, yeah.
Which is very understandable.
The model error is defined to be the error, you know, due to the numerical approximation here. But then
mm-hmm.
it's not just a BDE because this is a predictor corrector map. So
okay,
you have
so
to recount the whole thing.
The first equation, u hat h comma m given m minus 1, that's really just fh operating on u hat m.
Yes.
Okay.
And u hat m is the truth signal we got from
right,
the
right, right.
actual SKE,
okay.
which
yeah.
would be our truth.
Yeah,
our
from
our nature
signal.
In
right.
this problem. This is nature. And
okay, I'm on board.
And the error can be large because the time step could be quite
yes, but
sure.
what we show, and it's, of course, a biased filter for nature, but an unbiased filter for the finite difference scheme. So that's why there's an error.
Okay. So now I'm going to continue with something that Andy's like. I like it too, actually. So in the previous exposition here, we were talking about the true system noise variance. Like, I sort of ignore it, and I'm kind of lucky nobody caught me at that point. So here, this is approximate filter, right? So when I choose this noise error noise variance, right, basically, here what we said is that, okay, if I use a forward Euler or backward Euler, whatever, temporal discretization that I choose here, then the system noise should be discretized in the same similar fashion too, right? So now the argument is that is probably not a really good idea. Okay. So
there's no reason to use the time discretized
right.
noise that you get from the discretization of the difference operator. In fact, that's a bad idea in a lot of contexts, as we'll show.
Right.
Something else.
So Andy and Marcus Grote, they suggest an alternative way that is to choose the system noise using relative entropy. That is, we want to minimize the relative entropy between the density function P of the true filter and the density function PH of the approximate filter. Okay, so this quantity will be minimum if P is equal to PH. So as a representative, that means the moment's gotta be the same, right? The moment gotta be the same, then the Kalman gain is also related as a function of the moment. So the second moment is the covariance. The limiting covariance has to be the same. That means the Kalman gain has to be the same. So by using information criteria, that means we are going to choose the system noise such that your true limiting Kalman gain is equal to your approximate Kalman gain. But there is a little thing here, a little stuff that's going on, because I didn't show what K formula should be. K is a function of your model noise, your system noise, your F operator, and under some circumstances when F is greater than 1 and K is less than the following inequality, this represents a system where F is really unstable, highly unstable, And if you just solve the system, you're gonna get R is less than zero. So we decided, okay, just set it to zero.
No,
but
that's the entropy. It is the max. It is the least additional uncertainty choice for the asymptotic limit filter is zero, by the way. We didn't just set it arbitrarily. It is the one mathematically.
I thought you said arbitrary. But
no.
It turned out that later probably is a good idea to put it back. You know, why this is a bad idea? Remember that probability is not zero. Well, here, choose it to be zero. Later on, we're going to show that.
But it's really important for the implicit schemes, this information criteria.
Yes, for implicit scheme, we never have fh greater than 1. It's all less than 1. So we basically just solve the equations.
And the filter performance will.
So for an implicit scheme, you're inflating k, and for.
Inflating.
No,
R.
It's tricky. It's tricky. It's the following thing.
It's like a Fermi inflation, basically.
It's a model error design variance inflation.
Right.
And what it says, it's a little more subtle. If you take your truth model, and if your amplification factor is bigger than your truth model's amplification factor, then deflate the noise. And if it's smaller, inflate the noise. And it's a specific way to do that. We're going to see it. It's going to avoid filter divergence.
And it will not weight the model if it's totally irrelevant.
Absolutely. And that's what will happen if you just use time discretized noise with the implicit schemes, for example.
Okay. So let us test on single mode in the Fourier space. So I'm just picking one mode here, scalar problem, because we would like to understand this problem pretty well. All right. So in this single mode here, I'm going to sort of fix your observations noise to be equal to the equilibrium energy is 5, and then observations time, I'm going to set it to be correlation time, and then I'm going to vary the frequency of the system so that if omega is 10 to the 2, then it's highly oscillatory comparing to the damping term, which is 1, okay? And then we are going to test the filtering solution also, not just the offline. We're going to filter it using various number of ensemble size. And we check the performance, just check the RMS and then the ensemble spread, time average of ensemble spread, if you like. So we start the filtering process from just random initial state that are uncorrelated with the truth. So I'm going to go flip through three figures, which is going to be very busy figures, but I want you to probably hopefully stay closely. I know it's pretty hard at this time, but okay, we'll go case by case. First, I'm going to talk about forward order. Okay, when we employ a huge time step on the forward Euler, what you'll find is that your common gain is going to be equal to 1, okay? Which means the filter is trusted observations, nothing else to say, okay? So I'm going to show you, just bear with me. Let's just put our attention on all of the red curve and forget about these two plots, just look at the first one. The first one here is showing the amplitude of the dynamical system as a function of the frequency that I'm varying. As you see, if the frequency increases, then the forward Euler become highly unstable, right? Because the amplitude is greater than 1, okay? And then look at the limiting common gain. This is a limiting common gain as a function of frequency. You see it's pretty much sitting to 1. That's basically saying that the filter will trust the observations. So we'll see, is that right? So I run the filter test. Just forget about this. Look at that at the red one, okay? This is a plot of error as a function of frequency. So when I increase the frequency, you see that this dashes is basically my observations noise. And my red curve, my error due to the forward difference, is doing pretty much like the observations, okay? While the true filter, the filter that's solved using the analytical solution is showing by this black thick curve here. It's sitting well below your observations error. Okay? Now, go back to the offline criteria and let's check the backward Euler. What's going to happen here is without information criteria, you'll see that when you increase your frequency, your operator will be over them, and then you will have a zero noise. So basically, what's a dynamical operator? Zero is doing nothing. So you're not going to get a really good filter. And here, in this case, then, F1 minus KG will become a meaningless number. Okay? But then, if you apply information criteria, okay, you will sort of restore the noise. So you restoring the controllability, and then we have the stability condition. It will do well. Let's check it out. Here, as I tell you, let's pay attention on the blue curve now. Blue curve, there are two blue curves. The dashed blue curve is with no information theory. The solid blue curve is with information criteria. So here's a dynamical operator. It's over them. Look at the noise. Without information criteria, it's zero, right? Zero, zero, it's doing nothing. Now, when I invoke the information criteria, the system noise is amplified to almost very close to the truth noise, okay? And then you'll see that the stability is there, and let's check the solution. Without information criteria, it's going not really well, and then once you invoke the information criteria, the error is going down and do almost as well as the true filter. Now let's go back to the trapezoidal. In the trapezoidal case here, you have a marginal instability. FH is very close to 1.
For large omega. You forgot
sure,
for
yeah,
large
for
omega.
Large omega, right. Now, when you have a zero system noise, okay, there
and nearly
for
zero
large,
system noise.
For large omega.
Oh, sorry, you said it. I apologize.
I forget too. You know,
I apologize.
So, you know, here, FH is equal to 1. According to the stability theory, we don't have controllability, so we don't have stability. But when you use information criteria, you restore back RH to be greater than 0, and you have the stability condition, even though FH is not less than 1. The amplitude of FH is not than 1. So you can see that here, the stability here, before using information criteria, look, it's kind of tinkering around with number 1, right? And then when you invoke information criteria, it got pulled down significantly. And you see that too. That's going to go up. I don't know what number is that precisely, to be honestly. But then it's pulled down to whatever below the observation's noise. Okay? Another point that I want to make from this picture is that in this left figure here, I just take this slice and then I plot the error as a function of ensemble size. Here, for a large frequency, for frequency of 100, I plotted the error as a function of ensemble size too. What you notice, what you should notice is, look at the vertical scale here in the logarithmic plot, it's really small. So what it's saying is that if I just do with one realization, it's not that bad. Kind of amazing. And then here, what you see is when you use information criteria, basically it's pulled down, you know, the trapezoidal is being pulled down to almost very close to the truth. And it's quite robust to the variation of ensemble size too. On the bottom is I plotted the ensemble spread here. Now, you're probably kind of surprised at the beginning why the ensemble spread of the forward Euler and the backward Euler is sitting down even below the ensemble spread of the truth model. The only reason is like, look at the common gain. When you have a forward Euler, it's basically fully trusting the observations. On the other hand, the backward Euler is trusting the dynamics fully. So you could apply to many realizations. Will still be pretty much the same thing, right? The weight is just pretty much the same thing, so it's not too much variation. So from those point of view, it's pretty clear.
How do you calculate spread with one optimal number?
I took the difference between the truth, okay, the truth signal, and each ensemble, and then I took the variance in space, and then you take the temporal average in time.
So
it's a temporal average of ensemble spread.
By ensemble spread is not the deviation of ensemble member from the ensemble mean.
No, not ensemble mean, but deviation from the truth. So it's
oh.
That's why I sort of write down ensemble error variance. It's error. So I talk about all of this. So now let's go to the big system. How am I doing in time? 10 minutes. 10 minutes? Okay. So let me, so let's go on. Here we test on like a scalar wave equations. Okay, so here's the advection term and you have a damping and the stochastic forcing, we choose it to be this way so that when you FFT, you get just the stochastic noise. Now, there is additional complexity from doing it on the scalar and to this system. That is the resolution, like how many, what is the resolution? It's the complexity, okay? So the size of the wave number or the number of the. So here we have a theorem to saying that in general, if you have a damping and energy spectra that can be written in the form of power law. Okay, so here's the damping as a function of the wave number and your energy too. Here's a k to the minus beta. So here, what you'll see that this beta exponent beta is pretty important here. What we have is that if this exponent beta is less than 1, okay, the high wave number will more or less trust the observations as you increase your resolution. On the other hand, if beta is greater than 1, then it will the high wave number will trust the dynamics as n goes to infinity. So for our, so here I give you an example here. We set alpha to be 0, so a constant damping. We have a constant damping, and then we test it on two energy spectra. One is equipartition, where the beta is 0. So here, when beta equal to 0, you'll trust observations. On the other hand, we test it on fractal energy spectra here, with beta equal 5/3, which is greater than 1, you'll see that it will trust the dynamics. So let me show you that it's true. On the left is a equipartition spectra. On the right is the 5/3 energy spectra. You see that as I increase my resolution, okay, so the Kalman gain as a function of wave number here is going up to 1. So it trusts observations. On the other hand here, as I increase my resolution, you see that the high wave number is going to approach 0, it's trusted dynamics. Okay.
So the reason why we made this theorem is these are guidelines for. Suppose you're in a situation like an NWP sometimes with plentiful observations. Should you bother refining your mesh and using the observations or not? Depends on where your mesh is cutting and what's the nature of the turbulent spectrum you have. These are criteria that tell you.
So let me skip a lot of these things now. So the energy spectra we use is quite huge here, so it's highly turbulent. So just give you a feel that the true signal that we are trying to filter is something like this. Okay. Now I want to skip all of this offline. So let me just show you the results here, because I have time. Now I am testing my filter in the Fourier modes. Okay, so the scalar filter in the Fourier space, and I cross-checked it using like a real domain filter. Okay, the real domain filter that I use is just an ensemble Kalman filter with a huge ensemble size, so it basically mimics the extended Kalman filter. Okay, so the one I choose at this point is just ETKF, the off-bishops. The reason is because it's just easier to implement, and I know it. Okay, so here's a result of RMS error as a function of time. This plot is for our Fourier domain filter, and this plot is for the ensemble Kalman filter. So I use ensemble of size 100 while the resolution of the model is 20. Okay? So you see that the true filter is represented by the black one. And then if I use forward Euler, it's basically trusting the observation here. It's jiggle around the dashes here, and it's doing the same thing too in the extended Kalman filter. And then the other two implicit method without implementing information criteria is just far off the ops, and when I use the information criteria, it's kind of pulled down to be close to the true filter. And what I should mention about the extended Kalman filter here is that when I implement this particular predictor corrector method, the numerical step for propagation is implemented in real domain. So I don't have any Fourier domain, nothing to do with Fourier domain in this case.
We simply wanted to check that our criterion as a spectral filter carried over to the finite difference.
What's really interesting is that if we do this in a scalar filter, we basically sort of ignore the correlation between different wave numbers, right? While in the spatial domain filter, you'll count that. It might get, you know, but it seems like from this result, it doesn't really matter. They are comparable. So that's pretty interesting. And then, as you can tell here, I plot the error as function of ensemble size, and, you know, it's quite good. Increase the resolution. Even more revealing here. They're doing pretty well, right? Now, I should mention that when I increase the resolution, look at the truth, the black one, right? The uncertainties there is sort of squashed down a little bit. So that's what happens if you increase the resolution. Now, here's just a give you an idea what the snapshot of the field at time 50, at times 75, and 100. So you can tell, it's pretty hard to tell, but that's not using information criteria. You see the blue and the magenta, all the implicit schema are just doing nonsense. Well, when we use information criteria, it's got pulled down to the attractor of the system.
You also see Euler, the red one, is just always
tracking the ops. It's just trusting the observations, which is denoted by the circle. And this is a Fourier domain filter, and then here is the ETKF. Pretty hard to tell the difference. Okay, so I think I focus on everything here. Okay, I should probably go to here. I focus unstable filtering is basically trust the ops. The implicit scheme is doing very well, especially when information criteria is used. And then the higher the resolution might improve the true filter, and it's also approximate filter as well, but not as much, maybe. But the variance reduction is enormous. And then practically, both the implicit Fourier space method are computationally inexpensive, especially if you use the giant time step. Okay. But then we also show that we don't need that much ensemble anyway. Okay. And another thing is that if you do this filtering in this scalar in the Fourier domain, then you're insensitive to the resolution, to the ensemble size, and independent of tunable parameters. So one thing that I didn't mention here is that in my simulation, when I do the ETKF and Fourier domain Kalman filter, is that I cross-check using ensemble size of 100, right? I didn't mention this. So here's another point. See here, I use 100 ensemble, and in this case, when I increase the resolution, I check the 200. The reason is because the ETKF is kind of failed using 100. So it's quite sensitive if you do it in the spatial domain.
Just a quick comment, which John and I both know, the offline criteria also predict, in this case, why backward Euler beats trapezoidal, because the stability factor for backward Euler is lower than the one for trapezoidal. They're both doing pretty well, but
without the information criteria.
With information criteria. Because the magenta curve.
Okay. No, you were saying the backward
Backward, I would judge. Backward,
okay.
Backward.
Fine.
Backward is, was the winner in the
yes.
contest.
Sure. Yeah. So
sorry.
If you.
Sorry. I should have shut up. I apologize.
I know. But. So what Andy was saying is that you see the stability here, the stability from the offline, the stability quantity of the backward Euler, which is the blue, is lower than the magenta, which is the trapezoidal. That's what he was trying to refer to.
And that's why the backward Euler was almost
better.
As good as the obs. The trapezoidal was not bad, just a little bit worse for that very turbulent
right.
spectrum.
Right. So I should say about the omission of correlation between different wave number, and then I have that all. So here I also check the filtering, so I'm not going to touch all the offline or whatever. I'm just going to show you that it works as well on such a format stochastic model. So what do we mean by it? We actually test it on a toy model that has been used many times, and it's actually used, invented by Emmanuel, is it, right? Lorenzo?
No, Ed Lorenz.
Right. They use it for observability, right, tests.
Ed Lorenz wrote his predictability paper, and
for
then they used it for
targeted
observations a year later.
Yeah,
it's Lorenz and Emmanuel.
So this toy model actually represents some, you know, like a single latitude in this mean latitude wave weather pattern. So here's a sort of like effective light term, and then there's a damping, there's a forcing that might represent sort of like a solar heating. So it has a periodic boundary geometry, and the grid points are just uniformly distributed. So what we meant by the Poorman stochastic model is we try to, first of all, we linearize this model, but first we normalize it first. We normalize this model so that it has a zero mean state and a unit energy perturbation spectrum, right? So we try to normalize it in this sense, and then we linearize it, and then we add back the damping and stochastic forcing. So here is the, in the Fourier mode, so in the Fourier space, each wave number is represented by, this is the, representing the linearized model, and then we add the damping and the stochastic noise. Okay, so very much similar in the previous analogy that we had on the PDE. And here, we parameterize D and sigma here, these two parameters, by fitting it with the stationary Fourier and the correlation time. So here, instead of using like a perfect model experiment, we introduce, if we are filtering using this model, we introduce another model error.
So this isn't as a von Neumann stability test. This is really pushing it for a general weird spectrum.
Yeah.
We're going to just use this as a stochastic model. Let's see how well we do.
So we have some, you know, dynamical model error. And then I checked it using F equal to 16. So the external forcing, this is a highly chaotic system. And then here's several things. The perfect model experiment using ETKF is sitting down below. It's a perfect model experiment, okay? Observations come from that, nothing. Now, our, without filtering, here is sort of like the size of the chaotic attractor of the system, represented by this red curve. So it's an error as a function of time, again. Now, our Fourier domain filter is basically this blue one, that's the analysis error, and the forecast error is here. So you can tell that we don't beat that because we commit a huge crime in modeling error, but we are sitting below the observations. But here, I check it for observation size of 3. Observations error is square root of that. And then the time step that I'm using here is very much lower than the correlation time. Correlation time is a lot larger than that for every single mode. Now, let me take a giant step, okay? Let me take a giant step. And then I also reduce the observation size. What happened is that the perfect model experiment, in this case, it sort of diverged from your, you know, sort of go far off why the ETKF is failing that I could think of. It's like, in this giant time step that we are talking about, it's like every time you propagate, the forecast step is sitting very close to the chaotic attractor, which is represented by that here. Okay? It's basically far off. And then I purposely reduce the observation's noise. So in order to pull this down to here is pretty hard, right? While on the other case, it's not that far off. Okay, and then the effect of like nonlinearity on the model, that might affect that too. So I'm not gonna dwell too much on it anymore. Let me just close the talk by advertising this thing, the paper. So we present this, the first paper talking about stable time filtering for strongly unstable spatial extended system by Andy. So at that point, he was chanting that we could violate the CFL conditions. Now we see that it is stable. In our cases, it trusts the ops. It's not really a good filtering. I mean, it's trusty ops. Okay?
Although in that case, because we had a convective wave equation that was more really young, and we had fewer ops, what we had was 12 unstable modes in a 40-mode system, and sparse ops. We had only 8 ops there, for example. And we had a case where with 12 unstable modes, 8 ops, you could take a huge time step and still do stable filtering. But we had a k to the minus 3 spectrum, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and then
turbulent spectrum.
The first half of the talk, I was talking about this paper. I'm reviewing the explicit theory for offline testing, and then all of the result here for the PDE and the scalar system will be submitted to JCP for plentiful observations. The current going on is we are working on the case of sparse observations, and I myself and Andy is going to write a paper on L96 on complex dimensional.